Good morning and welcome to Mornings for the Master here on the Gospel Radio Network. I'm your host this morning, Ryan Smithy. Certainly thankful that you have been able to join us as we continue in our study of the Old Testament. And we find ourselves here in the midst of the book of Judges. And we'll come today to Samson, a rather interesting judge, really stands out not just for his physical strength that maybe is most easily remembered, but also the life and the character of Samson is so much different than that of other judges. And yet I think there's a number of lessons we can certainly learn from looking at his life. And so I hope you'll join us this morning in Judges 13 through 16. If you have the opportunity to sit down with us, open the pages of your Bible, we'll be there in just a moment. But I also want to remind you as we begin of some upcoming events, and certainly a busy number of weeks that are ahead of us with events that are going on, and let you know of just a few of the things that we know of, and certainly I always encourage you to let us know about the things that you know going on in your area that we might make mention of them. This week is continuing a gospel meeting at the North Jefferson Church of Christ in Mount Pleasant, Texas. Our own host, John McCormack, that has a program with us on Wednesday morning, Simply Christian, is preaching that meeting, and the title is I Love the Church. And you have opportunity tonight at 7 and also tomorrow night at 7 to get out to North Jefferson as John is doing a wonderful job proclaiming the gospel in that meeting. You also have opportunity to tune in right here on the Gospel Radio Network. Simply go to our homepage online, tgrn.org, and look for that special broadcast button at the bottom of the page. Then Chris Groda from there at North Jefferson is going to be doing a gospel meeting in New Boston, March 26th through the 29th, The Grace of Our Lord Jesus Christ. And so we'll be looking for that to come up. March 26th through March 30th is the 51st Annual Memphis School of Preaching Lectures in Memphis, Tennessee. And then a great number of meetings for the Northeast Texas area goes on the next week. April 2nd through April the 5th is certainly a busy time. We are going to have a gospel meeting at the right here at the Mount Vernon congregation. Looking forward to Kerry Clark being with us, but also at the Broadway Church of Christ in Tyler, Texas. Jim Laws is going to be hosting a gospel meeting, Can I Trust My Bible? We have Ronnie Hayes that is going to be at the Bangs Church of Christ out in Central Texas that week. Matters That Matter will be the topic of that meeting. At the Fruitvale Church of Christ, Mike Bonner is going to be hosting a gospel meeting there. And so whether you want to go to Fruitvale, Mount Vernon, Bangs, or Tyler, certainly great opportunities there to get out and hear the gospel proclaimed and support those good works. Those are just a few of the things that are going on, and now we'll be able to jump over into Judges 13 as we talk about Samson. As we mentioned, Samson is one of those interesting characters of the Old Testament, one of those interesting people, because here he is among the judges. Typically, we think about godly and faithful men that rose up to serve God and certainly were men of honor and respect, and yet we have a hard time seeing that in the life of Samson. There are a lot of things that begin well in his life, and as a foreshadowing, I think there's a lot of things that maybe end well in Samson's life, but the life itself was one that would certainly be hard to be characterized as one that was godly. And yet, we are going to be able to find him as one that's going to be listed in that great hall of faith of Hebrews chapter 11. And I do believe we see a sense here in the life of Samson that he was certainly a flawed individual. And yet here was one that did not deny, did not lose his faith in God and was willing to be used as a servant of God. And perhaps that's the greatest commendation that we can give him in his life. Well, let's begin here in Judges chapter 13. As we look again at this cyclical cycle of the judges, we've talked before about how you have this period of time in which Israel was faithful after the death of Joshua, and then they enter into these cycles in which they fall away from God. They are oppressed by the nations that they had failed to drive out from before them. They enter into such a period of despondency that finally they will call out to God, ask for his deliverance. God would raise up a judge, a deliverer, to fight against the oppressor, to deliver the people, and for a period of time, then would be faithful unto God once again until they drifted away. The Philistines were one of those nations that they had failed to drive out, would be a continual thorn in Israel's side. Here, the Philistines lived over against the Mediterranean Sea. They would be able to attack Dan, Judah, and Simeon just because of proximity there to their land. And so we enter into this period of time in which once again there's going to be this oppression, and the Philistines are the ones that will bring that oppression by God's allowance, by God's design at this time to drive his people back to him. And that cyclical cycle ought to remind us that whenever we fall away from God, there are going to be consequences. There's choices that we make, and those consequences are because of those choices that we have made. And so we begin there in verse 1. It says, "The children of Israel did evil again in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord delivered them into the hand of the Philistines 40 years." You know, one of the things, again, that surprised me about this period of time of the judges is how often you enter into this cycle. Was it 40 years before they called out to God? Was it 40 years before the deliverer was ready? Was God allowing them to dwell in that period of oppression for some period of time to hopefully drive these lessons home? I can't speak to all of those things, but it's interesting. It seemed they oftentimes had to hit that kind of rock bottom before they were finally willing and ready to call out to God. But yet, once again, they've been delivered into the hands of these oppressors, and now will be calling out to him once again. And so who will he raise as the judge? We see this in verse 2 through 7. We're going to find a family that is going to receive this promise. There was a certain man of Zorah of the family of the Danites whose name was Manoah. And his wife was barren, and bare not. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto the woman, and said unto her, "Behold, now thou art barren, and bearest not. But thou shalt conceive, and bear a son. Now therefore, beware, I pray thee, drink not wine or strong drink, nor eat any unclean thing. For lo, thou shalt conceive, and bear a son. And no razor shall come upon his head. For the child shall be a Nazarite unto God from the womb. And he shall begin to deliver Israel out of the hand of the Philistines." The woman came and told her husband, saying, "A man of God came unto me, and his countenance was like the countenance of an angel of God, very terrible. But I asked him not whence he was, neither told me he his name. But he said unto me, 'Behold, thou shalt conceive and bear a son. And now drink no wine nor strong drink, neither eat any unclean thing, for the child shall be a Nazarite to God from the womb to the day of his death.'" And so we see this promise. God has heard his people. He's beginning to raise up this deliverer, and he's going to send the deliverer into the hand here of Manoah and his wife. And now this promise has been delivered to them. Some will make a point here, and perhaps it dwells some consideration that of the Nazarite that Samson is to be. And yet there are three things that are mentioned, and yet a fourth of the Nazarite vow is not mentioned. You could go back and you could read details, Numbers chapter 6, verse 1 through 8, and it deals with this Nazarite vow. And typically the Nazarite vows were for a period of time, and the One, it is said there in Numbers chapter 6, is to separate himself unto Jehovah and separate himself from wine and strong drink. He shall drink no vinegar of wine, nor vinegar of strong drink. Neither shall he drink any juice of grapes, nor eat fresh grapes or dried. All the days of his separation he shall eat nothing that is made of the grapevine, from the kernels even to the husks. All the days of his vows of separation there shall no razor come upon his head until the days be fulfilled, in which he separateth himself unto Jehovah. He shall be holy. He shall let the locks of his hair of his head grow long. All the days that he separateth himself unto Jehovah, he shall not come near to a dead body. He shall not make himself unclean for his father, for his mother, for his brother, for his sister, when they die, because his separation unto God is upon his head. All the days of his preparation he is holy unto Jehovah. This was the vow under which Samson was to live, not just for a period of time, but indeed for his whole life. So much so that even now, before the conception, his mother is to begin to prepare herself. And specifically, she's not to eat any unclean thing. She's not to partake of anything made of the grapevine. And so she begins that process even before Samson is conceived and brought forth. And so Samson's going to enter into that vow and live by it. And of course, we know he's not exactly always going to live up to that. But it's interesting, there is no specific mention here in the instructions to Manoah's wife and concerning the birth of this child about the not entering into or coming near unto a dead body. Some have argued that Numbers specifically deals with the death of humans, of people. Others will point out that even Samson would come near a number of dead bodies, not just of the animals, but even of the humans, that he would be in charge of taking their lives. And it is potential here as we look at the life of Samson. God was raising him up for a point, for a purpose, and that was to be a judge, a deliverer over the Philistines. And so of necessity, he was going to have to come unto clean bodies. But still, we do see that those three aspects concerning the eating of the unclean things, concerning of the razor upon his head, concerning the eating of the things of the grapevine, that he was to respect those aspects of the Nazarite vow. And so with that promise, I love the response of Manoah. And let's continue reading there in verse 8 through 14. And Manoah entreated the Lord and said, O my Lord, let the man of God, which thou didst send, come again unto us. Teach us what shall we do unto the child that shall be born. And God hearkened unto the voice of Manoah, and the angel of God came unto him, the woman as she sat in the field. But Manoah, her husband, was not with her. And the woman made haste and ran and showed her husband and said unto him, Behold, the man that hath appeared unto me the other day, that came unto me the other day. And Manoah arose and went after his wife and came to the man and said unto him, Art thou the man that spakest unto the woman? And he said, I am. Manoah said, Now let thy words come to pass. How shall we order the child? How shall we do unto him? And the angel of the Lord said unto Manoah, Of all that I said unto the woman, let her beware. She may not eat of anything that cometh of the vine, neither let her drink wine nor strong drink, nor eat any unclean thing. All that I commanded her, let her observe. Not so much here in the instructions that are given, but what I want to point out is the attitude of Manoah and his wife. Here is one that's told, you're going to have a child. You're going to have a son. And the first thing it seems that Manoah does is pray unto God and asks basically for wisdom. What are we to do? How are we to raise this child? And I would that every parent would have that same attitude, that would turn and ask of God, now that I'm expecting a child, or looking forward even unto the birth of a child, give me wisdom. And look to God's word. Manoah was asking for this angel, this man of God, to return and give more information. We have God's recorded word for us, and would that we would, in wisdom, turn to the pages of his word to desire to know more. How are we to live? How should I be as a parent? What should I do unto this child? What should I teach them? What would you have them to know? Oh, that we would seek after godly wisdom. Man has not, or God has not left man without answers to the questions that we ask. He's given us a rich resource in his word, that we have a great pool there of wisdom if we would but turn and listen to it. Are we willing to seek after God? Are we willing to turn to him in investigation? Are we willing to seek his word? And one of the greatest lessons of the life of Samson and his parents is that seeking after wisdom, and would that Samson had followed the same attitude that they seem to have had of putting spiritual things first in their lives. And so this angel has come. He has revealed even more information. We are left with the idea of this hospitality that they are going to offer. And verse 15, Manoah said unto the angel of the Lord, I pray thee, let us detain thee until we shall have made ready a kid for thee. The angel of the Lord said unto Manoah, though you detain me, I will not eat of thy bread. And if thou wilt offer a burnt offering, thou must offer it unto the Lord. For Manoah knew not that he was an angel of the Lord. And Manoah said unto the angel of the Lord, what is thy name? That when these things come to pass, we may do thee honor. The angel of the Lord said unto him, why askest thou thus after my name, seeing it is secret or wonderful? So Manoah took a kid with a meat offering and offered it upon a rock unto the Lord, and the angel did wondrously. And Manoah and his wife looked on, for it came to pass when the flame went up toward heaven from off the altar that the angel of the Lord ascended in the flame of the altar, and Manoah and his wife looked on it and fell on their faces to the ground. But the angel of the Lord did no more appear to Manoah and to his wife. Then Manoah knew that he was an angel of the Lord. And Manoah said unto his wife, we shall surely die, because we have seen God. But his wife said unto him, if the Lord were pleased to kill us, he would not have received a burnt offering and a meat offering at our hands. Neither would he have showed us all these things, nor would as such at this time have told us as these things. And the woman bare a son, and called his name Samson. The child grew, and the Lord blessed him. And the Spirit of the Lord began to move him at times in the camp of Dan between Zorah and Eshtol. And so as we look here at this life, this encounter that has happened, a few more things that we might point out here. The Manoah does not yet know who this man is. Maybe assuming he is simply a messenger, but he's going to find out indeed he is an angel of the Lord, not just simply a man. And so he's asking him, will you let us give you something to eat? And he says, no, I will not eat. If you want to make an offering, make it unto the Lord, make it unto God. Who was this angel? Again, some will simply say it was an angel, it was a messenger of God. Perhaps, indeed, this is the second member of the Godhead, not yet having taken on human flesh, as we'll see in John chapter 1 and verse 14, that Jesus was eternal, eternally dwelt as the Word. Is it perhaps this second member of the Godhead that has taken on this form, a theophany, if you will, a manifestation of God as he stands before Manoah and his wife? Potentially, some have pointed out here even Isaiah 9 and verse 6, when it talks about this coming son, the first name that is spoken of him is going to be Wonderful. Isaiah 9 and verse 6, unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, speaking of the coming Christ. The government shall be upon his shoulder, his name shall be called Wonderful, Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Perhaps this is that second member of the Godhead that Jesus has taken on this form of flesh, or this not form of flesh, but rather this appearance before Manoah and his wife to deliver this message. And even as we're going to see him, that will ascend in this the flame of the fire before them. And so that is certainly a potential that is before us. And then Manoah will know this was indeed an angel of God. And he is fearful, even for his life, having seen this, and is wondering, now are we going to die? Again, I would point to the wisdom of Manoah's wife. God surely would not have given us these promises. God would not have allowed us to offer this sacrifice unto him if he had been displeased with us. And as you close that chapter, you're going to see then the fulfillment of the promises of God. He had promised this son, and indeed the son comes. They have named him Samson. The child is growing, and the Lord is blessing him, and he begins to work in his life. We learn once again about the faithfulness of God. His promises delivered, and he was going to deliver on his promises. And we're going to begin to see God work in the life of Samson, as is mentioned in verse 25. It is the Spirit of the Lord that is going to begin to move him, and that's going to become even more important as we move into these next chapters. From whence does his strength? Whence does his power come from? It was from God. And that was a lesson that Samson greatly needed to remember. And so we shift here as you go into chapter 14, and now Samson has grown, he has matured, and we begin reading of his, well, his poor choices in Judges 14, verse 1 through 4, where it says, Samson went down to Timnath and saw a woman in Timnath of the daughters of the Philistines. And he came up and told his father and his mother and said, I have seen a woman in Timnath of the daughters of the Philistines. Now therefore get her for me to wife. And his father and his mother said unto him, Is there never a woman among the daughters of thy brethren or among all my people that thou goest to take a wife of the uncircumcised Philistines? And Samson said unto his father, Get her for me, for she pleaseth me well. But his father and his mother knew not that it was of the Lord that he sought an occasion against the Philistines. For at that time, the Philistines had dominion over Israel. And so we're reminded here of that oppression. We're reminded that it's the Philistines that Samson is going to be called to be a deliverer over. And yet we see here at the same time his poor choices. Here was his parents that had inquired of the Lord, how do you want us to live? How do you want us to be parents? How do we raise this child? And they certainly saw the lack of wisdom in Samson's choices, going down to the Philistines and choosing of the Philistines a wife that he might go and he might marry. And we wonder, where is his wisdom? Where is his, if you will, spirituality? It certainly did not seem to be manifesting itself on this occasion. What was he putting forth? His own desires, instead of doing that which was right in the sight of God, seems to be what we witness here. God had certainly made instructions and commandments concerning the marrying of these nations that were around them. He had forbidden those things. Deuteronomy chapter 7, verse 1 through 4. It makes mention that when you go in, you are to cast out those nations, and you are not to give your daughter unto their sons, and you're not to take their daughters unto your sons. And so they had these warnings, and yet that's exactly what Samson is wanting to do on this occasion, even against the better wisdom and judgment of his parents. Isn't there someone among our own that you can find, that you could marry, that you could take to wife? And Samson rejects not only the wisdom of God, but also the wisdom of his parents. Now, it is interesting to look at the note of verse 4, the idea here that says that they knew not that this was of the Lord. And some have taken that statement to seem to indicate that Samson had no choice in this matter, that he was instructed to go and take this woman of Timnath to be his wife. Others, and I lean towards this idea, is that it is Samson that has selected his wife from among the heathen. This is his choice. This is his doing, in spite of what God had said, in spite of the warnings of his parents, but that God would use that event. He would use the poor choices of Samson even to deliver him up as this judge, as the one who would be victorious over God's enemies. And so here is even going to begin unfolding how that is going to be accomplished. How is Samson going to be raised up to be this great judge and this deliverer? How is he going to begin working in his life to accomplish this? I certainly have a hard time seeing where God would instruct Samson to do that which he had forbidden within his law. And so I see here likely the attitude of Samson that says, I saw her, I want her. And regardless of wisdom, regardless of what God has said, regardless of parents, this is what I want to do. And sadly, many people have that same attitude even today. I don't care what God has said. I don't care what those instructions are. I don't care about the wisdom of those who have lived this life before. I know what I want to do. And they will seek wholeheartedly after those things instead of listening and listening to a voice of reason and listening to a voice of wisdom. And yet, even in those poor choices, even though it may have grieved his parents, nevertheless, God would be able to use those events of Samson's life to accomplish his will and his purposes. And I believe that would be a better indication there of what is being recorded for us in Judges 14 and verse 4. And so, as he is going down to Timnath, now we see an event of his life in verse 5 through 9. It says, then Samson went down, his father and his mother, to Timnath, and came to the vineyards of Timnath, and behold, a lion roared against him. And the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him, and he rent him as he would have rent a kid, and he had nothing in his hand. But he told not his father or his mother what he had done. And he went down and talked with a woman, and she pleased Samson well. And after a time he returned to take her, and he turned aside to see the carcass of the lion, and behold, there was a swarm of bees and honey in the carcass of the lion. And he took thereof in his hands and went on eating, came to his father and his mother, and he gave them. And they did eat, but he told them not that he had taken the honey out of the carcass of the lion. Again, that's one of those points that some point at and say, there's Samson flaunting the idea of the Nazarite vow, even coming near unto this dead body. That certainly is a question of his life, whether that was something that was applicable to him, and whether he was flaunting that on this occasion. Certainly, this was, while the King James here says this, this young lion, it was certainly a fierce one. It likely even a strong lion here, or else this would not have been a greatly remarkable event. But we see that here, verse 6, it was the Spirit of the Lord that came mightily upon him. It was the Lord that was going to allow him not just to conquer over the lion, but even to conquer over his enemies. And so Samson needs to begin to see here that it is the power of the Lord, that you have this great strength and this this great ability. Perhaps it is here that he begins to recognize that within his life. And so, Samson, God could deliver you or could use you as a deliverer. You could do great works. You will go forth into battles, but it is the Spirit of the Lord that is allowing you to do these things. It is God that is enabling you to be successful. Don't forget that. And we're going to return to that even in a little bit in his life. But how many even today want to do things as they see on their own? How easy is it for us to think about our needs and providing for ourselves, and we forget to think about God? We forget to think about God as the daily provider of the blessings that we need, whether it's in our food, whether it's in money, whether it's in clothing and shelter. And we simply forget that God is the giver of every good and every perfect blessing in our lives. I'm afraid that's a lesson that Samson seems to forget at times in his own life as well. Now we see the wedding feast and this great riddle, verse 10 through 14. So the father went down unto the woman, and Samson made their feast, for so the young men used to do. And it came to pass, when they saw him, that they brought 30 companions to be with him. And Samson said unto them, I will now put forth a riddle unto you. If you can certainly declare, if you can certainly declare it to me, then shall you give me 30 sheets and 30 change of garments. And they said unto him, put forth thy riddle, that we may hear it. And he said unto them, out of the eater came forth meat, and out of the strong came forth sweetness. And they could not in 3 days expound the riddle. And so this riddle has been posted to them. These 30 men that had been provided for him as companions set before him, likely because he had gone down with his father and mother and not with with other friends. And so he sets this before them, this riddle. And he, of course, knows the meaning, but they cannot figure it out. And he has promised them 30 linen garments. That would be the outer garment that they would wear, and 30 changes of raiment, that clothing worn underneath, that which would be next to the skin. And so full changes of clothes, if you will, that he has promised them if they can figure this out. And yet for 3 days they're trying and cannot figure it out. And then we continue there, verse 15, and it came to pass on the seventh day, they said unto Samson's wife, entice thy husband that he may declare unto us the riddle, lest we burn thee and thy father's house with fire. Have you called us to take that we have? Is it not so? And Samson's wife wept before him and said, thou dost hate me and lovest me not. Thou hast put forth a riddle unto the children of my people and hast not told it to me. And he said unto her, behold, I have not told it to my father or my mother, and shall I tell it to thee? And she wept before him the 7 days while their feast lasted. And it came to pass on the seventh day that he told her, because she lay sore upon him. And she told the riddle to the children of her people. And so it seems that she has been trying to figure this out. The note there that she has cried these 7 days that would be mentioned that she has been asking, verse 17. And so finally on the seventh, even though she's been trying to figure out, they put extra pressure, her people, and said, we're going to burn you and your father's house upon you if you don't find out the answer. And so the seventh day she entreats even more greatly, asking the meaning of this great riddle, and finally he will give in and he will tell her. And we begin to see again the weakness of Samson. Here a great strong man, but women were going to be a great downfall to Samson. She was a weakness, and so here he could no longer abide the weeping and the crying, and will give in and reveal the meaning of this riddle. Oh, what a lesson we could learn about influence as we look at the life of Samson, the influence that others had upon him. We see the influence of the 30 friends upon his wife, that they would force her into giving even greater entreaty into figuring out this riddle. We see the influence of the women upon Samson, that they had the ability to bat their eyes and shed a tear and moan and complain that, yes, he would finally give in to their wishes and to their desires, and to be careful who we allow to have an influence over us. And so they will tell Samson now the meaning. Verse 18, the men of the city said unto him, on the seventh day before the sun went down, what is sweeter than honey? What is stronger than a lion? And he said unto them, if you had not plowed with my heifer, you had not found out my riddle. He knows. She told you. My wife was in that sense not faithful to me. She found out and she told you, and that's the only reason you know the answer. Verse 19, the Spirit of the Lord came upon him, and he went down to Ashkelon, slew 30 men of them, and took of their spoil, gave change of garments unto them, which expounded the riddle. And his anger was kindled, and he went up to his father's house. But Samson's wife was given to his companion, whom he had used as his friend. And so here again, God is going to use Samson. As others have pointed out probably quite well, this is not just the rage of Samson, but God was allowing him to do these great feats. And so he would go up and he would kill the Philistines at Ashkelon in order to obtain the garments, be victorious and deliver those, but he would go up. Again, in his anger, it seems, he leaves his wife behind. He goes up to his father's house, and his wife is going to be given unto this, if you will, friend, one of those who had been provided as a companion during this courtship or during this engagement, and would be given her as wife. And so we begin to see Samson, one who is victorious in some things. He's certainly a man of great strength, but not always a man of great wisdom, and not always one who would do those things that would be right, not only always do those things that would be right in the sight of God. And yet still he could be used as a servant, and we will never, and we will continue to see that even as we go into Judges 15. Now we're going to see again the woes that would be brought upon Samson. We see a great destruction in Judges 15, verse 1 through 8. Came to pass within a while, in the time of the wheat harvest, Samson visited his wife with a kid. It seems his anger has calmed down. He's ready to go back down into his wife. And he said, I will go in to my wife into the chamber. But her father would not suffer him to go in. After all, she had been given unto another. And so, verse 2, her father said, I verily thought that thou hadst utterly hated her. Therefore I gave her to thy companion. Is not her younger sister fairer than she? Take her, I pray thee, instead of her. Once again, Samson's anger is going to be kindled. Samson said concerning them, Now I shall be more blameless than the Philistines, though I do them a displeasure. And Samson went and caught 300 foxes, possibly jackals here, took firebrands, torches, and turned tail to tail, and put a firebrand in the midst between the two tails. And when he had set the brands on fire, he let them go into the standing corn of the Philistines, and burnt up both the shocks, also the standing corn with the vineyards and the olives. And the Philistines said, Who had done this? And they answered, Samson, the son-in-law of the Timonite, because he had taken his wife and given her to his companion. And the Philistines came up and burnt her and her father with fire. And Samson said unto them, Though you have done this, yet will I be avenged of you, and after that I will cease. And he smote them hip and thigh with a great slaughter, and he went down and dwelt in the top of the rock Etam. And so here again we're going to see this victory that he has over the Philistines. Remember, they are the oppressors at this time. They are the ones that have power, have conquered over Israel, and yet Samson is beginning to have victories over them. And so he goes down, he finds that his wife has been given away, and he makes this interesting statement that he is going to be found more Well, I just lost it here. I shall be more blameless, he says in verse 3, more blameless than the Philistines, though I do them a displeasure. He was going to do, in that sense, what was honorable and right, and yet they were going to suffer because of it. And so here's that account that we learn even as children, and that idea of Samson catching these foxes or these jackals and tying them tail to tail and setting them forth. You can imagine 150 torches going forth into the wheat fields as it was ready unto harvest. And because of that, they're going to seek vengeance. They're going to go and burn the woman that should have been his wife and her father in the house. And then again, Samson says, I will be victorious, and slays them, and made with a great slaughter, it says there in verse 8. And so he has that great victory, and now he will go and he will rest in this rock. Probably the idea here of a cave or a cleft there. It is a protected place that he could now rest. Well, news of Samson's events would likely spread very quickly, and so now he is going to have opportunity of another great victory as he is pursued, because, verse 9, the Philistines went up, pitched in Judah, and spread themselves in Lehi. And the men of Judah said, oh, why are you come up against us? Now they are wanting retribution. They answered, to bind Samson we are come up, to do to him as he hath done to us. And so 3,000 men of Judah went to the top of the rock of Etam, said unto Samson, knowest thou not that the Philistines are rulers over us? Don't you know that we ought to be subject unto them? Do you know that we shouldn't be going about angering them? We ought to just get along with them, seems to be the response of the men of Judah here. And they ask, what is this in verse 11? What is this that thou hast done unto us? He said unto them, as they did unto me, so have I done unto them. They said unto him, we are come down to bind thee, that we may deliver thee into the hand of the Philistines. Samson said unto them, swear unto me that you will not fall upon me yourselves. There is a fear here, it seems, of Samson, even of the men of Judah, as they go up in a great number to talk to him. You've angered the Philistines. And another great sadness here is Samson, who is having victories over the Philistines to help God's people. Even by the very power of God, he is doing this, and yet they blame him. We see similar things today, even as men of God will stand up and preach great truths, and sometimes that angers those that are about us. But what is our attitude? Are we apologetic? I'm sorry, he shouldn't have said those things. Was it the truth? Now understand, we certainly need to be those who will preach the truth in love, Ephesians 4 and verse 14, but you know, sometimes truth is still going to anger. Truth is still going to hurt. And I hope that we are not people that are apologetic for the truth. We ought to defend it. We ought to do so in love and compassion for lost souls. Nevertheless, we ought to stand for and contend for the faith, Jude 3. And that's what we see here in the men of Judah, that they didn't want to stand up for God. And even in this sense, for God's man that was fighting for them, and so they would bind him to deliver. And Samson agrees to be bound as long as the Jews agree, you won't kill me yourselves. And so they do this. Verse 13, they spoke unto him, saying, no, but we will bind thee fast and deliver thee into their hands, but surely we will not kill thee. And they bound him with two new cords and brought him up from the rock. And when he came unto Lehi, the Philistines shouted against him. Can you imagine the idea there that they are thinking, we are victorious. Samson, our enemy, that one that rose up against us, he's delivered into our hands. And so there's this great victory. Oh, but verse 14 continues. The Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him, and the cords that were upon his arms became as flax that was burnt with fire, very brittle and easy to break. And his bands loosed from off of his hands, and he found the new jawbone of a donkey and put forth his hand and took it and slew 1,000 men therewith. You just thought that you were victorious, but this power came upon Samson, that once again God was going to deliver this great strength into his hand, and they are going to feel, if you will, that wrath of God. How great a thing God can work with even a seemingly insignificant thing. Here Samson is going to kill 1,000 with just a jawbone, and now he is once again victorious. Verse 16, and Samson said, with the jawbone of a donkey, heaps upon heaps, with the jaw of a donkey have I slain 1,000 men. I think we begin to see another problem within Samson, that perhaps he is forgetting who it is that has given him this power and this strength. Look at what I have done. I killed these 1,000 with just that jawbone. And it came to pass, verse 17, when he had made an end of speaking, that he cast away the jawbone out of his hand, and he called the place Ramoth Lehi. And here he is going to name this place the height, or the lifting up of the jawbone. But notice verse 16, and he was sore athirst. And he called on the Lord and said, thou hast given this great deliverance into the hand of thy servant. Now shall I die for thirst and fall into the hand of the uncircumcised? But God clave a hollow place that was in the jaw, or in the rock. And there came water thereout. When he had drunk, his spirit came again, and he revived. Wherefore he called the name thereof in Hakore, which is in Lehi unto this day. And he judged Israel in the days of the Philistines 20 years. And so now, what's interesting is, having this great victory and seemingly so lifted up in pride, and look at what I've done, Samson's reminded of his humanity. And he is going to be humbled with this great thirst, so much so that he's going to cry out to God. He's going to say, here, I've done this great work, and now you're going to let me die of thirst? And it's God that's going to give him a spring of water. It's God that's going to deliver him. And so now he is going to change the place, change the name of the place. Now it means the well, or the spring of him that cried. And so Samson's going to be reminded, you don't stand alone. It was God that delivered the Philistines into your hands. It was God that provided you with that great strength. It was God that you had to turn to when you were thirsty. Samson, you didn't do it alone. And so he was having to learn even here some humility. And it says that he was a judge over the Philistines for some 20 years. No doubt we don't have all of the record of the things that were happening in the life of Samson, though we do have these specific events that are recorded for us. But as we come into the last chapter for the day, we're going to see the sad downfall of Samson. And once again, it's going to be because of a woman. We first read here in verse 1 through 3, it says, Samson went to Gaza and saw there a harlot, went in unto her. It was told the Gazites, saying, Samson has come thither. And they compassed him in, laid wait for him all night in the gate of the city, and were quiet all the night, saying, in the morning, when it is day, we shall kill him. They think they finally have him cornered. It says, Samson lay till midnight, and arose at midnight, and took the doors of the gate of the city and the two posts, and went away with them, bar and all, and put them upon his shoulders, and carried them up to the top of a hill that is before Hebron. They thought they had him once again. Here he has gone out again. Samson seemed to have that eye for women. And he has gone unto this harlot. And once again, we can think about a lot of different lessons and how Samson certainly was turned by the heads of pretty ladies. How often are we reminded of the damage of one that can pull us away from God? Whether you are a lady, whether you are a man, those around you can turn your head away from God. Even Solomon, in all of his great wisdom, allowed the wives to turn his heart away from God. Samson certainly did it on occasions here. And yet thinking they have him trapped because the gates of the city would be shut and locked at night, they think they can trap him there and catch him in the morning, yet Samson arises at midnight. It says basically he plucked up the gate of the city, bar, doorpost, everything, picked it up, carried it upon his back, and not just went out of the city, but carried all of this to a hill in Hebron, a distance of almost 30 miles. And so again, we see the great strength and deliverance of Samson once again. And then maybe the most famous of the accounts, we see him with Samson and Delilah in verse 4 through verse 22 is really going to be that account. We won't be able to read all of that. But verse 4, it says, "It came to pass afterward that he loved a woman in the valley of Sorek, whose name was Delilah. And the lords of the Philistines came up to her and said unto her, Entice him, see wherein his great strength lieth, and by what means we may prevail against him, we may bind him to afflict him, and we will give thee every one of us 1,100 pieces of silver." Here again, we're going to see Samson turned by the pretty face, by one who has gained the attraction of his heart. And she is going to be wooed by the promise of great money. And so she will begin to look, wherein is your great strength? No doubt they are tired of being conquered over. So they want to know, what can we do that we can trap Samson, that we can finally gain the victory over him? And so we'll begin asking her. And he's going to be given basically four chances here to show some wisdom, but he doesn't learn. She will begin begging to know, wherein is your great strength? Verse 7, he will tell her, if you bind me with seven green withes or seven green cords that were fresh there, never dried, I shall be weak as another man. And so she does this while he's asleep, calls out, Samson, Samson, the Philistines are upon you. And he's able to rise up, break the cords, and go out and defeat them. Again, a second time, she asks and begs, you're mocking me and you're telling me lies. Please, tell me wherein is your great strength. This time, verse 11, he says, bind me fast with new ropes that were never occupied, and I shall be weak as another man. Yet she does this, and once again, he is victorious over them. The third time, now you think Delilah would learn and Samson would learn, but nevertheless, a third time, this encounter. And he says this time in Judges 16 and verse 13, if you weave the seven locks of my head with the web, oh, we're getting a little too close to home. It's about the hair. And once again, she will do this, and yet Samson would be victorious once again, and now again. Now she is pressing him daily with her words, so much so that his soul was vexed unto death, Judges 16 and verse 16, just constantly begging him and pleading with him until finally he would give in. And in verse 17, if I be shaven, my strength will go from me. I shall be weak like any other man. And Samson's going to learn God meant what he said. Now his strength is going to leave. God wasn't always going to be with him regardless of what he did. There were consequences to his choices and his actions. And Delilah will shave his head, and he will lose his strength. and the Philistines would be able to conquer over him. Certainly, I think pride, maybe a certain amount there of that arrogance we see of Samson, certainly could learn something about the enticing words of a woman to turn us away. All lessons that we could learn of Samson, but now he is conquered over and is going to live the rest of his life having been defeated by the Philistines. And he will have his head shaved. She once again calls out. And yet it says, he knew not that the Lord was departed from him, Judges 16 and verse 20. He failed to realize the consequences of his choices, and now he was going to be conquered over. Verse 21, the Philistines took him, put out his eyes, brought him down to Gaza, bound him with fetters of brass, and he did grind in the prison house. He was conquered. Here, Samson, some have said, is a kind of a reminder. He was blinded. He was blind, bind, and grind. In other words, he was bound, taken into captivity. He was blinded as they would gorge out his eyes, and he was forced to grind. He was put to this manual labor. And so we see this great, strong man that has been brought low and now is made a spectacle of. But verse 22, his head, the hairs of his head began to grow again. And now as he is brought as a spectacle before the Philistines, verse 23, they would gather together into the house of Dagon, their god, and rejoice. Why? Because they say, our God has delivered Samson. You see, Samson didn't just sin in his life. He brought a reproach even upon God from the enemies. And that is part of the consequence now that he is living. He has been brought low because of this. His sin has brought that reproach. And yet, as you know the account, as you will look there, Samson once again is going to ask of the Lord one thing. As he's there in the house, he will put his hands on the great pillars of that house. He will cry out to God, something that seemingly he has not done in a long time. And he is going to cry out in a penitent prayer and ask the Lord to be with him once again, especially for the loss of his two eyes, Judges 16 and verse 28. God be with me, that I may be avenged of the Philistines for my two eyes. And with that, he bows himself with all of his might, and he causes that house to fall. And the record is the dead that he slew at his death were more than they that he slew in his life. Samson would be victorious over the Philistines. His kinmen would take his body and place it in the burying place of Manoah, his father's, Judges 16 and verse 31. Again, as we look at the life of Samson, there's a lot that we can shake our heads at. There's a lot that we can wonder about. But in the end, here was one who finally learned to trust in God, to humble himself before God, and was used mightily of God to bring about a victory for his people and to deliver them. And so Samson, it says, lived in faith, Hebrews 11 and verse 3. He died in service to God. And ultimately, would that not be what we would wish for ourselves as well? He didn't always live as he should, but in the end, he turned to God and would obtain that faithful report. Would we have it be said of us that we lived in service to God? Perhaps if nothing else, that's a lesson we can learn of Samson. Certainly thank you for joining us today, even as we have run out of time. But certainly hope that you'll join us again, Lord willing, tomorrow as we continue in our study of the Book of Judges right here on Mornings for the Master on the Gospel Radio Network.